comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this beautiful place we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. Talk radio like nowhere else on the planet. We're here because you have a right to know and because you matter. The K-Files has left the building. That's right, this week's edition of the K-Files is out. It should be in your email box if you haven't already opened your email box. It should be there right now and awaiting your perusal. If you have not yet subscribed to the K-Files, you need to do that. You know, I tell people this every night because we have new listeners every night, but a number of you, perhaps you, you hear me say it, and you just haven't done it. Well, look, nobody can twist your arm and make you do it, and if we could, we wouldn't. If you don't want to be in the know, that's your choice. But if you want to be in the know, you need the K-Files. It's free. I don't know how I could make it easier for you to get it, unless I just, like, printed it out and hand delivered it to you each week. This is really simple. You just go to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, click where it says K-Files, and then subscribe. You get a confirmation email with a link you have to use to activate your subscription, and when you do that, you start getting the K-Files. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to. K-Files has been published since we started the show, actually about 3 weeks after we started the show. We started publishing the K-Files. So that was back in 2000. We have subscribers who are still with us that started in 2000. And so it's got to be pretty good, I would think, or they would not still be with us. So you be sure you subscribe, all right? And then you'll get next week's edition. We are 100% listener supported. If you're listening to the Kevin Smith Show or watching it at our website, you will not hear commercial ads. We are listener supported, and without your support, we cannot continue to broadcast. With your support, we've been able to continue to broadcast for 11 years, but we need you. And you get something really, really cool for that. It's $6.95 a month to become a member, and you get access to the members area, which is really cool. It's got a lot of features. You've got your own blog, your own photo gallery, your own profile page. You can write and publish articles there. You've also got the chat room and the forums, the library of free ebooks and the video galaxy, and a lot more. And it's only 23 cents a day, $6.95 a month. I mentioned, I think it was last week, that may be about to change. So you need to lock it in right now. We'll be back right after this, so do not go away.
All
All right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And tonight we're going to be doing things a little bit different than we normally do things. And there's a reason for that. I had a guest scheduled for tonight from San Diego, a guest who has videotaped some UFOs over the years, has some of those up on YouTube and so forth. But and a very interesting story to tell. But the guest has contacted me today and told me that his mother was involved in an automobile accident, and that although she was not seriously injured, she is being kept in the hospital tonight. And he didn't feel that he could do the show. He wanted to be able to stay with his mom at the hospital. Apparently she's advanced in years, and he's quite concerned. And I think that's understandable. So kind of at the last minute, well, not kind of, really at the last minute, I got in touch with Joe Montaldo, whom a lot of you have been asking for here recently, and ask him if he could slide in here and be with us on the show tonight. He very graciously accepted, however, because of previous commitments, he can't be with us during this first half hour. So he'll be sliding in here to talk with us after that next break. And I know it's always a real kick when Joe is here, and we always get a lot of good information. I think you're really, really going to enjoy having Joe with us. So what we're going to do is this. I'm going to answer a couple of things that have come up today that I think, when I get an email, that one email, the statistics for talk shows indicate that that represents usually about 100 other people that would have said the same thing, and they just didn't take the time to send you the email. I'm not sure how that statistic transfers over when you get phone calls. But I had a couple of phone calls today from people who, although this was what I'm about to tell you, this was not their primary focus. It was not why they called me. It did come up because of last night's show. Now, in last night's show, I dealt with water on Mars. And I talked about how NASA has announced, as of yesterday, that they think that what they're looking at on Mars in a particular set of photographs is flowing water on the surface of Mars. Okay? And both of these calls, in the course of the conversation about other things, they didn't call me to talk about that, but it came up. We talked about what they wanted to talk about, and then this came up. Both of them expressed they didn't understand. So what's the big deal about that? I mean, why is that such a big deal? I mean, really, and it was expressed this way by one of them. Most of us have known there was water on Mars for a long time. So why is it such a big deal? Well, here's the why. And you really need to get this. Okay. The reason that's a big deal is because that amounts to disclosure by NASA that what they've been telling us about the surface conditions on Mars is not true. And that has huge implications. Those of you who have been listening to this show for a long time know that this show, I confront things that don't make sense. I don't normally confront people. I'm usually pretty polite to people. At least I try to be. But things that don't make sense, I generally confront those things with some pretty tough observations and questions. And you have heard me confront that issue over the years a number of times. That the conditions on Mars can simply not be what they have been described to us by NASA. It simply can't be. And I've given you some examples of that. Now, there are people that take exception to some of what I say here, and that's okay, because I believe in freedom of speech and freedom of thought. I truly do. And it's quite all right if you don't buy what I say. I have said, NASA has said, first of all, that the density of the air pressure, that's not exactly the same thing. It's two different ways of measuring about the same thing, air pressure and density. But not exactly, but they do correlate, okay? But what I have said is, you know, NASA says that the air pressure on Mars is, and the density of the atmosphere is so thin that there cannot possibly be liquid water on Mars. Now, because, and the reason is it goes straight from ice when it melts. It doesn't go into liquid state. It goes straight from ice into vapor. That's the official story. Now, I have pointed out that that can't possibly be true. First of all, they use parachutes whenever they land something on Mars. Parachutes are part of what they do to land something on Mars. It's not entirely parachutes. It's parachutes for a while, and then it gets down to a certain altitude, and then they fire retro rockets and things like that. Or in this last case, they get down to a certain altitude, last case being the rovers, and it drops this big balloon that rolls across Mars until it comes to a stop. Then the balloon sort of gets popped, and out comes the rover. But they used parachutes. Now, they've been telling us that the air pressure on Mars and the density of the air is like thinner than paper, less than 1% of what we have here on Earth, something like that. Okay. How do you use parachutes then? A parachute relies upon the density of the air and the friction caused by the fall to inflate the parachute. And if the atmosphere is so thin that it can't even allow liquid water on the surface, how can it open a parachute? Well, I've had people say, well, that's because of the velocity. This thing is headed towards Mars. It's coming into the atmosphere at like 12,000 miles an hour. Of course, it's going to gather up enough of that thin atmosphere to open the parachute. Well, okay, that will work, possibly. But the parachute, then, is slowing down the descent. As it slows down, you no longer have the speed that it needed to gather up enough of that very thin atmosphere to keep it inflated. It would deflate, and the thing would plummet to the ground. So, I have postulated that the atmosphere on Mars has to be a lot thicker than what they've been telling us. I've also talked about that airplane. NASA, it was not just a proposal. They funded it and built it and then canceled it. It was a project to build a remote-controlled airplane that they could fly on Mars with wings. Folks, that's called aerodynamics in order for it to fly. If the gravity on Mars is approximately 50% of what it is on Earth, that's what they tell us, so assuming that's correct, then the density of the atmosphere has to be something near 50% of what we have on Earth in order for the aerodynamics of an aeroplane to work. So you got 50% of the gravity and less than 1% of the atmospheric density, and you're going to fly an aeroplane? all right, let's do it this way. Let's try that on Earth with reverse ratios. Here on Earth, we have 100% of the gravity we have on Earth. Easy to understand that, right? Well, if we apply the Mars ratios, they have, according to NASA, less than a percentage, less than 1% of the atmospheric pressure at surface. Less than 1%. Since the gravity is twice what it is on Mars, here on Earth, let's cut that atmospheric density that Mars has, cut it by 50%. Bring that to Earth. Can you fly an airplane? No, you can't. So I have said, if they were planning to fly an airplane, and they did fund it, they did build it, if they were going to do that, there has to be a much thicker atmosphere on Mars than what they've been telling us. Again, a lot of people have, not a lot, but a few people have taken issue with that and have said, look, I'm a pilot, I'm a private pilot, I know you could do this. No, you can't do this. If you don't have atmosphere, you don't fly an airplane. You might fly a rocket, but you don't fly an airplane without an atmosphere, because it depends on the flow of air over the wings in order to gain lift. So if you have 50% of the gravity that Earth has, you got to have somewhere near 50% of the atmospheric density that Earth has in order for that plane to fly. Or, as you reduce the atmospheric density, you have to increase the speed of the craft. So, as I say, you know, if you make it a rocket plane, maybe you could fly it. It's either that or the atmosphere is much denser. I've also pointed out to you that NASA's own scientists have said that, you know, the atmosphere on Mars contains a whole lot of oxygen. And 15 times more than what they expected. And we see the blue skies. The reason it's blue is because of the type of gases that are in the atmosphere. Change the composition, change the type of gases, and you change the color. The reason the sky is blue is because it's got oxygen and nitrogen and hydrogen. It's got to be very similar to Earth. Now, I'm not saying that you have Earth-like conditions on Mars. What I'm saying is they're a whole lot closer to Earth-like than what we've been told. And now, when NASA comes along and says, we think we're looking at water flows on Mars, I'm glad they're telling us this, but what that tells us is they haven't been telling us the accurate information about the conditions on Mars. Because if there is liquid water, if there are water flows, there has to be liquid water. And if there is liquid water, then their assertion that the atmosphere is so thin there cannot be liquid water is false. And so what's the big deal about water on Mars? Well, the big deal about water on Mars is that, yes, a lot of us have been saying there is water on the surface of Mars. I'm not talking about oceans. I'm not talking about huge bodies of water. I am saying that I think, as for me, I've looked at photographs that indicate to me that there is liquid water on the surface of Mars. Well, now NASA's saying they see water flows, and by confirming that, or at least saying we think there are water flows, what they're telling you is we haven't been telling you the truth about the atmospheric pressure. So this confirms the things that I've been saying about the parachutes and the airplane. about the composition. Well, it doesn't confirm anything about the composition, but it sort of corroborates the composition of the atmosphere having oxygen and nitrogen and hydrogen. Because in order to have water, you got to have H2O, hydrogen and oxygen, right? So that's what's important about it. What's important is it's a huge crack in the dam. It's a huge step. It's not even a step. It's a huge leap toward disclosing the true nature of the conditions on Mars. Now, you might be saying, okay, so, why is that important? Well, because the next thing that comes with that is it is possible once they have moved us down this path and people kind of wake up, their gray cells kind of shiver and shake a little bit, and they think, oh, yeah, the atmosphere has to be more dense. Once that happens, it's an easy step forward to say, we have found life on Mars. And I said at least 2 years ago, maybe longer, but at least 2 years ago, in those programs I did about the Phoenix lander up at the North Pole of Mars, I told you they are going to begin taking little baby incremental steps toward telling us they found real life on Mars. What is it about the Phoenix lander that would make me say that? Well, there are several things, but try this one on for size. The Phoenix lander is out there on the surface near the North Pole. It's scooping up ice. It's testing it. It's looking for what it looks for. All of a sudden, there's a big flurry of activity. The first thing that happens is the chief scientist of that program, of that project, Dr. Peter Smith, announced to the world, that dirt's just like the dirt in your backyard. You could probably grow asparagus in it. Shortly after that, and I mean hours after that, they had an emergency meeting at the White House with the president. Now, what do you think that was about? Just to tell him, well, we think we found conditions conducive to life. We've known there are conditions conducive to life of some sort for a long time. So what do you think the emergency meeting was all about? Whatever that emergency meeting was all about, I think we're inching closer day by day. NASA's revelations, like the water on the surface of Mars, NASA's revelations are beginning to move us toward discovery of what they briefed the president about. Maybe we found neighbors. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, hopefully we'll have Joe Montaldo with us. We'll see.
Showing my IQ jump 20 points.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. And we do have our guest this evening, Joe Montaldo, on the line. And we'll bring him right up on air here in just a minute. Let me say this. Joe is extremely busy. He's a businessman. He owns an internet radio network, which, by the way, carries this show. It's the UFO Paranormal Network. And he owns an FM radio station. And he is the international director of the International Community for Alien Research. He's a busy guy. And he appears on other radio shows, which he was doing a little bit earlier, and has joined us now. And, Joe, I really appreciate it, and thank you. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show.
Oh, Kevin, anytime. You know I love coming on your show, man. I always love coming on your show. great interview. And my other favorite host I was on just before you was with Tree Sheridan from Global Focus. I love both of y'all. Y'all great interviewers.
All right. Now, Joe, you guys do, when I say you guys, I'm talking about ICAR, International Community for Alien Research. You guys do research into a lot of things associated with the UFO slash extraterrestrial phenomena. Some organizations only look at alien abductions. Some of them only look at UFOs that people have seen or that have landed. But you guys look at a lot of different things. And I know from the last couple of times you were here, you talked with us about research that you've done into blood types and their correlation to this extraterrestrial phenomena. So I want to throw something at you, and let's talk about it just a little bit. It pulls a couple of things together here, and in a hypothetical way. Last week, on Friday night, I shared the story of our former producer, a story that I had known since 2008. This is the story of him having a, I think everybody could agree, a violent encounter with a gray, with an extraterrestrial. I think there were more than one who had come into his house and were trying to abduct he and his wife when he woke up and grabbed a samurai sword and killed one. And then they all took off. He saved blood and tissue samples. And he asked me to set on the story until he could get this professionally investigated. And that's reasonable. I said, sure, you know, I'll sit on this until it's professionally investigated. Well, it took a while because to professionally investigate it takes money, quite a bit of money if you really do a top-notch job of it. And Robert Bigelow sent a team to this guy's ranch. They were there for about a month, I believe, and ultimately the blood and tissue samples were sent to laboratories for testing. Last week, the news came out that the testing had been completed and that the laboratories all concluded that, number one, the blood is pure hemoglobin. Number two, it does not match any plant, animal, or human on this planet. And the blood cells look like fibers. But under the microscope, they look like either they're fibrous, but they look kind of like segmented rods. So they it's pure hemoglobin, and the cells are not circular, are even approaching circular. They look like little threads or segmented rods. In the skin tissues, same results, except the cells look like segmented grass, but it isn't grass. You know, you can only see it under the microscope. So we did the story last week. I put the information out there for people last week. But then I wondered, I'm pretty sure you've heard of this Morgellons disease, where people have these fibers growing out of their skin, and yep. It's really bad stuff. And I found a video that shows one of them under microscope, and it's moving around as though it's alive. And what I wondered is it possible that there is a link between this Morgellons, however it's pronounced. For the rest of the show, I will say Morgellons. So is it possible there's a link between Morgellons and these grays? because I'm wondering if the Morgellons fibers and their seeming ability to be alive on their own, although they don't appear to be biological, I'm wondering if that is perhaps something that is in the blood of these aliens.
Well, I tell you what, you definitely came to the right place, because something we've been doing, you know, the blood type study is all fine, dandy, but some research we've been doing, me and a few other of the ICAR directors, is, you know, a lot of people don't realize there's two types of small gray. There's several types of gray, but there's two different types of small gray. One of the gray is just a gray, he's just 3 foot tall. But the other 3 foot tall gray is actually part gray and part, machine is not a good term because they don't use mechanics in the way we do. It's more like a biomechanical. Grays grow their ships. Their ships are technically alive. So when they make cyborgs, they're not making cyborgs out of steel and metal, but out of different types of material. The thing about it is sometimes, and I've heard this before, that if one of those get injured, it does look like these weird fibers going out. The other thing is the other grays are supposed to be directly linked to us, so there has to be some kind of common there between our genes, or they would never be compatible. So it looks like there's two different types of blood factions going on here. So for us, when you're talking about Magellans, I'm really thinking that made it came from a cyborg gray. And what else makes me think that, if the guy was able to kill one without any reprisal, it couldn't have been a regular 3 foot gray, or they would have burned his butt to the ground right where he stood.
Hmm.
So it had to have been one of them cyborgs. Oh no, grays are very weird. Even when you threaten them, a lot of times they will physically restrain you without even moving a muscle. They'll just restrain you by just looking at you. You just freeze. You can try whatever you want. You're not going to move under any circumstances. They're mind over matter for them. Our mind compared to theirs is just not a comparison at this point. There will be one day, but not at this point. And it's really easy for them to take control of us. It's actually quite easy. So I learned early on, I could never figure out, like Whitley Strieber one time was talking about him and his brother chasing one around a shotgun. I'm thinking, what the hell kind of gray is this? I mean, from personal experience and other kinds of ideas, grays don't tolerate this kind of behavior. So we started splitting our research to see what we could find, why it was acceptable sometimes and not. And what we did find is, it seems like with the cyborg type, there's a lot more leeway given. But for a gray, because grays are supposed to live a very long time, we're talking tens of thousands of years. So if you kill one, you really just hack somebody off dead. If you can even kill one, you really hack somebody off dead. But the automatons, as far as the grays are concerned, are not alive in the fashion that we consider life. They're just considered to be tools that other grays can telepathically link with at all times. So I don't think most people are aware of this. You know, if you follow our research closely, you'll know it, and there's a few other researchers in the field that are working on it as well. But in general, it's not something that's known to the general public or to most contactees. Most contactees just know there's a difference between some of the 3 foot grays. They act differently.
Okay, but do they look different?
They look pretty much the same. The 2-3 foot grays, if you look at them face to face, you really can't tell the difference. They pretty much look the same. But the problem is the grays that abduct in family lines do have personalities and they do have emotions. And you can sense that when dealing with them. The other ones really don't. They really are kind of emotionless and they're just doing a job. They are just like a tool is what they really are. And for a long time, I always thought they were the same thing, and then we realized later on that they're not. They're two entirely separately different things. Because we didn't know that there was, you know, well, there's the 3 foot grays, the 5-6 foot grays, the 7 foot grays, and whatever that 9 foot queenie thing is. So we noticed like four different heights, and we noticed at least three different colors. So there's at least seven varieties of gray that we know of, and if you count the automaton one, there's eight different types of gray. And see, that's another thing that most people aren't aware of, that there are different types of grays and different ones. And the weird part is the hierarchy seems to work by height. It's weird.
So the taller you are, the more authority you'd have.
That's what it seems like. I mean, I can't prove it, Kevin, but it does seem that way. If you listen to the different contactees, that's what they're saying. They're saying, you know, when the 5 or 6 foot guys come in, they usually do a different type of experiment, and the little 3 foot grays usually leave. When the 7 foot guys are in there, everybody seems to be concentrating on those guys. And occasionally they say they see this big queen looking thing. Now, in all fairness, there's some confusion going on here. Is this queen thing actually just like a 9 foot gray, or is this one of those praying mantis looking things? See, there's a little distortion, and there's not enough information to really know. All we know is they're really big, they're 9 foot tall, and everything seems to, like, stop when they're around. Even if there's other types of aliens around, they seem to just stop whenever this thing's around. So whatever it is definitely controls a lot of authority. There's no doubt about that part. But we're assuming, and, you know, assuming and assumptions are always a bad thing, but we're assuming that it is some type of, like...
All right, we have to step away for a break, and we'll be back right after this. Don't go away, folks. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest is Joe Montaldo. Joe, you said that you and your group have some information that the cyborg type of grays, these that some people say they are sort of like just biological computers, that whenever they get injured or if there's some kind of calamity and they die, you said there was something about fibers with them?
Yeah, well, it's weird because I've heard this more than once. There was a description, I had read a report back, it was about from 1958, I believe, and it actually came out of France. And there was a farmer that talked about these grays were coming, and they kept coming, and one night he was out in the barn doing something, and one came up, just, you know, walked up and startled him. And when he did, he had an old-style, I forgot what you call them. But anyway, they got like four blades on the end of them. And when he did, he just swung before he just reacted is what he did. And he said it just swiped him on the side. He said, but what was odd was it looked like these little fiber things were coming out of its body, and when it was hitting the ground, they were still moving. But the really weird part about this, and I don't know if it was Magellan, but he got some kind of weird disease where there was things standing up on his skin. It was just a really, and when you were describing the disease, it just clicked in my head. I was like, well, you know, I never really thought of it like that. And then there's been some other cases where they've talked about, well, one lady really weirded me out one time. She said that something happened on board a ship and one of them got killed. And when it fell to the ground, it like bled out, and the fibers themselves all kind of migrated, I guess, towards like a drain or something. But they were like wiggling. I don't know how to explain it. It was weird. And that, and she said the fibers were, she said, you know, it was weird that you could first see them with the naked eye, because at first all you could see was a fluid. But for some reason or another, I guess you could make the ripples. I guess you could see like a ripple effect or something. And she said on top of that, it looked like there was little hairs on them. And I'm thinking to myself when she was saying this, I'm thinking, well, how can you get this kind of detail? You know, you're laying up or you're up on a raised surface looking down at the ground probably a few feet away from it. I always wondered how she could get that kind of detail. But I also realized if the grays are present or she's linked to one of the grays, it may just been information she was accessing from their head. It might have been what they were actually watching or seeing.
Okay, so you read an account. You read an account by a witness who said they saw these fibers move.
Yeah, actually, I've read more than one. See, that's what I'm saying, and I can't understand like the guy from the 1958 case. You know, I never could figure out, you know, what it was, because it sounded something like out of sci-fi, like the blob. The guy touched the stuff, and these fibers and stuff started growing off his hands and his arm and stuff. And it was weird, too. I mean, it was, you know, when you listen to the descriptions, because there's no pictures that I can find, but when you picture the description, it's like these little things raising up like little stalks with little viney things growing off of them. It sounded almost like a mushroom or, I don't know, it was really weird when the way they described what was growing on the individual itself. And from what I understood, the guy didn't live much longer after that, 3, 4, 5 years tops.
Well, you know, down in Brazil, they had a case called the Varginha case, and it's called that because it happened in the town of Varginha, where a UFO crashed, and then people saw these little creatures running around. One of the interesting parts of that story, really mysterious and kind of ominous, has to do with, I believe he was a military policeman. Now, maybe not. He might have been some other type of government agent, if you will. By agent, I mean he's a military police or firefighter or something. But anyway, he grabbed one of these little guys and in his arms and got into the police vehicle, and they drove him to the hospital with him holding this thing in his arms. In about 48 hours, he was dead of a complete immune system collapse.
And you see, that's weird, because I've heard of other people having being exposed to stuff where their immune system was affected or stopped. You know, it's odd, too, because there's a couple of reports where people, contactees, had been taken, and it was like their immune systems were shut off, and then they were taken again, and they were reactivated. You know, stuff like that always weirds me out. It's almost like, you know, they're either intentionally or accidentally doing experiments that carry these results. I don't know. Well, maybe they're just trying to figure out what different parts of them, how it affects us. It's kind of weird.
Well, I think it's safe to say if you run into an alien, don't.
Touch them? Yeah.
Yeah, don't touch them.
Yeah, y'all know NASA used to make that kind of stuff illegal. They don't anymore. Apparently, you can touch aliens now. Back in the day, you couldn't touch them. Well, you know what I'm talking about. Was that Article 12, 14 or something?
Yeah.
It was like 30 years they were illegal to touch guys. It carried 5 years in jail, $10,000 fine.
Yeah, so if you had contact.
All the contactees would be in prison.
If you had contact
you know
with an extraterrestrial.
Get rid of that.
Yeah. All right, so, all right, let's go back to the blood study. I mentioned it. We haven't discussed it tonight. Mm-hmm. We had a medical doctor on the show here who explained to us that there is no Rh negative antibody. And he said the reason we say you're Rh negative, it means you don't have the Rh antibody.
That's right. No gene.
Yeah, and so the Rh factor is either present or not. If it is, you're Rh positive. If it's not, then we say you're Rh negative, but it really means Rh zero, because it just means you don't have the Rh factor. You found in this blood study that a big number of people who are contactees or abductees, experiencers, with extraterrestrials, a big number of them, I believe you said, are Rh negative, right?
Yeah, the majority of them. That's the right now. It makes up in our database. It makes up 68, or about 66% of our contactees are Rh negative.
Well, I wonder if that would indicate that to the aliens, the presence of Rh means for them real harmful. I wonder if being Rh positive is something that is very dangerous for the aliens, and so they try to avoid that and deal only with Rh negative.
But you know, it's interesting because A positives, most of the really nasty, nasty, nasty people on the planet that did really, really nasty stuff turned out to be A positive. Maybe they are. Or maybe they just don't want monkey genes mixed with theirs, you know. The people with, that's what people don't understand. Rh is from Reese's monkey. That's what it is. It's the gene. If you're positive, you share a gene with a Reese's monkey. If you're negative, you don't. That's really what it comes down to. And there's a couple of other oddities about this. Everybody was Rh positive until 25,000 years ago. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of the D antigen, but until 25,000 years ago, everybody was positive. And then somewhere along the line, we developed no need for Rh. And then we developed O negative, which is the universal donor, the purest blood there is on the planet. And get this, 40% of contactees are O negative. So there's something to it. I mean, there's definitely some correlation between our blood and the extraterrestrials and what's going on. But, you know, there's been some other weird stuff when we started doing this, Kevin, because if you use the Sumerian and Egyptian texts and the Dogons, you find out that in the early days, the humans had created a species that interbred with another species. The humans created a human-like species, but they weren't really sentient. They were more like a slave race. The reptilians interbred with them and created the species, maybe not the species of us that's here today, but our predecessor.
All right, we have to step away for break. We'll be back, folks, right after this. Don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. I think I pushed a button and lost our guest. So let's see. Are you with me, Joe?
Can you hear me?
I can hear you. Yeah, I can hear you.
That's good.
Okay. All right.
So I heard it get real quiet.
Yeah. So he's still with us. That's good. All right, Joe. We're talking about this the blood thing. Now here's. I'm kind of taking this step by step. We've talked about the grays that have these fibers inside them that come out and crawl away when they get seriously injured. So we've also talked about how the vast majority of abductees, contactees, are Rh negative. Okay, if they're Rh negative, meaning they do not have the Rh factor. Mm-hmm. Then I want to jump back to the story that I broke last week about John Edmonds and this the blood sample and tissue sample that he provided, and laboratories have tested and said it's not plant, animal, or human from this planet, but the blood was pure hemoglobin. All right, I'm going to ask a question related to all of that that you may or may not be able to answer. I don't know. All right, here's the question. Is it possible that if you've got pure hemoglobin, that it really is advantageous and necessary for you if you need to resupply your hemoglobin somehow? It's advantageous to you and necessary for you to have hemoglobin that has no Rh. Therefore, you start with blood that has no Rh factor and reduce it to hemoglobin. What do you think about that?
It's quite possible, and it's not that complicated. So, you know, I was thinking of when you said that, because I was thinking if you've ever given blood where they just take the plasma out of your blood and put the blood back into you, that's basically what they're doing there.
Okay, now let me ask you to speculate about this. Why do you think the Rh would be a problem to these little guys?
Well, you know, when we started talking about this, because for me, if you really spend time in ancient history, there does seem to be three interventions back then. And the Grays may not want the blood that has the like human type alien blood in it, or maybe the reptilian type alien blood. I'm not sure which one, but they might not want that involved. or it might be something that comes from that rhesus monkey, because that's a gene that's shared with, that is detrimental or harmful or otherwise bad for them in general. Because they do seem to have a keen interest in our blood. And not just in our blood, but in a lot of stuff that goes along with our blood. They just seem to have an interest in it. And, you know, there's weirdness because, you know, the Rh negative is a much purer plasma, it's a much purer blood. It's why it's the universal donor. It's the only one that can be the universal donor. But yet, the Rh negative people, the O negative people, only make up 7% of the world. That's it. And they can only take Rh negative blood. They can't take no other blood. Now, you can be AB negative or AB positive, and you can still take O negative. But you can't, you know, O negative can't take anything else. So, and since they're the highest number of concentration contactees, there's something in that blood that they're specifically interested in, specifically. Or they wouldn't be abducting that many people. Or we could take it a step further and say they're actually breeding it in to the population. It scares me a little bit.
All right, so up until 25,000 years ago, we were all Rh positive.
Yep.
Okay, if we were all Rh positive up till 35,000 years ago, something like that, what could possibly have happened that started the Rh negative blood types?
Intervention of alien DNA into our society. The Greys may have deliberately entered into our the Greys may have come here and found the perfect breeding tool. They may have came here and found that the reptilian and the humans and their blundering and whatever else they may have been doing created a species that could handle their DNA. And in turn, since then, they're developing and using us for something. Because, I mean, come on, we've got literally thousands of part of hybrid babies being taken, all kind of stuff going on that definitely seems to be interested in breeding a specific group inside the normal population of this planet. And it's not like they're trying to get rid of the rest of the planet or anybody else. It seems like they are hell-bent on breeding a specific group inside the population that already exists on this planet, like they need it for something. We're speculating now, ladies and gentlemen, before y'all start calling and driving poor Kevin crazy. This is speculation. There is a lot of data that goes along with what we're talking about that really leads in these directions. But there's still a lot of work to be done on this.
All right. I want to open up the telephone line and allow our audience to join in the conversation here this evening. Folks, a bunch of you have been asking for Joe to be back on the show. Here he is, and you've got the opportunity now to talk with him directly. And you can ask a question, make a comment. And the telephone number is 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, that telephone number will work for you. However, we understand that it can be expensive to make international long-distance calls. For that reason, what I've done is put a flash message link on my website. So if you're outside the USA, you're outside of Canada, you can go to my website, scroll down, you'll see the picture about tonight's show, and right above it is the link where you can send me a flash message, and that costs you nothing. Zero, zip, nada. Nema nishta. Okay, this blood study has been finished now for how long?
Well, part one finished up about, I want to say 6 months. Part two is actually finished, but I've been holding off on it because we're going to launch, November Hansen had done a personality survey, which is really good and there's a lot of information on it, and we're going to launch part two of the personality survey, which is only for abductees and contactees, because we want to match it against the blood type information. And we found over by doing all this information that there's specific types of personalities that go with blood types. So we want to see how this plays out amongst the abductee contactee community, and that should really give us the rest of the data that we're looking for, at least on this part of it, if that made any sense.
Okay. Describe for us the difference between Part 1 and Part 2 of this blood study.
Part 2 is for us to... Part 2 is allowing us to find out... If I'm out on the street talking to you, and I say, hi, Kevin, and I start asking you questions, and you start answering these questions the way I'm wanting you to, then the next few things you're going to hear out of my mouth is, you know, because I'm already going to see what color eyes you got because I'm going to be looking at your face. I'm going to say, well, what, coincidentally, what blood type are you? Now, if we've been talking for 15 minutes through all this personality information, and I ask you about your blood type, and you tell me a specific thing, oh, my God, I'm going to say, well, you're a contactee. And I'm going to know it almost to a 90 to 95% accuracy rate. That is what this part two is going to allow us to do. Part one gave us, it allowed us to up our accuracy amongst contactees in an incredible way. And then part two will be the correlation of the personality study, the blood type study, and also there's three doctors that joined in on this study, which is interesting because in the beginning they were like, no, Joe, I don't want to talk to you about this. Don't even use any more material. Don't write to me anymore. So I sent them a couple of questions about some weird things I had noticed, and then all of a sudden they're like freaking out on this stuff. So they've gotten involved. So their official opinions will also be coming out in part two, what they think this is. And how close on track is ICAR actually with the data? So that'll actually be coming out as well, because we've developed some really weird theories and have noticed some really weird trends. And here's one for you, Kevin. You know, according to our mad scientist, that we all came out of Africa, right?
Uh-huh. Yeah.
So let me ask you a question. Why in South America and Central America is the O people 99.995%? All of South America and all of Central America is O. And almost 70% of the Americans in Canada are O. Now, Africa is A and AB. So if it came from Africa, why aren't we seeing these genes? And you know what? You don't even see a progression over the land bridge, but I'll tell you what you do see. You see O at the bottom, O at the middle, and then you see a clear line up through California into Canada of O going across into Europe and down into Africa. So when I presented this to these different doctors, they freaked because you can't really argue with it. The map shows, and I didn't do the maps, these doctors did the maps. The map clearly shows a clean progression of a blood type moving from 100% population into the mainstream population, opposite of the way that they said we were created on this planet. And they can't even argue with it. So this was going to actually be presented this year for the ladies and gentlemen listening tonight. The doctors will be presenting this as a real scientific thesis this year, and it will be up for peer review. And this is because of ICAR, this is being done. And that's really what part two has to deal with. And I got to say, we were very flattered by it when I heard all of it.
Sure. But, all right, let's take this telephone call, and we'll come back to that. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming.
Hello, Brent.
Joe, I'm going to preface this by saying that as far as I know, I am not a contactee or an abductee or whatever, but I am O negative.
Okay.
And just out of curiosity, what does your research suggest would be character traits for the O negative?
Well, O negative people, mostly what you find, they're above average IQ, usually in the 130 to 150 range. A lot of them run a lot higher than that. It's a common trait amongst O negatives. It's actually a common trait through the Rh negative factor. Rh negatives are generally more laid back, more understanding, more controlled in the way they think and do things. They're also more the ability to think in the abstract. And by the way, these are not my findings. There are several different colleges that have done these studies on the personality of blood types. You can find them. They're all over the internet. It's common data. Because I don't want people thinking ICAR actually did that. ICAR is the one that established the contactee base of blood types, but we're not the one that did the original blood type work. That was actual doctors and scientists doing that. And contactees in Rh are generally like that. That's just who they are. You find that the positive blood types are actually a lot more aggressive. Like A positives, I mean, I was talking about this at the beginning of the show. Start going around, do this. Get on the internet and look up your favorite villains and see what blood type you are. Guess what, guys? There are hardly no Rh negatives that have even committed a bad crime. And get this, more than half of our presidents were Rh negative. And you know what? The top five presidents were all Rh negative. And actually, out of those top five, three of them were O negative. So it gives you an idea of who these people are. It's a segment of our population that is surpassing the rest of the population. It's like the whatever gene is running rampant, whether it's alien or just natural selection of evolution. There's no doubt that the O negative bloods are pure, cleaner, and all around better. And the O negative, like I said earlier, is the only universal donor. It's the only blood that everybody can take. And it's because it's a much more pure bloodline, which suggests either it's closer to the source or it's been genetically manipulated to be such. And remember this, 25,000 years ago, there was no Rh negative on the planet, none. This is something that overnight, along with green eyes, disappeared. For no reason, no understanding, and because of it, we had to introduce the D antigen gene, which means, you ever heard in the old days while they used to test when you got married, if you were negative or positive,
mm-hmm.
because you might have had to get a D antigen shot so that you could have children. So it wasn't necessarily a good development for the population as far as children goes, but it was an excellent development for if you're going to be in wars or where you need lots of blood or things like that. So you got to kind of question how it came about being or
did
why.
Did you just say green eyes?
What was that?
Did you just say green eyes?
Yeah, if you're Rh negative and green eyed, you stand a 60% chance that you've been abducted by aliens.
I'm a mutant then. Green eyed or negative.
Wow.
Well, that's what we are. If you can ask any doctor this, they'll tell you this. If you're green eyed, no negative, you're a mutant. That's what you are. Your green eyes are mutations that happened about 25,000 years ago, and O negative is a mutation. And these are very significant mutations in the development of man. It's not like anybody around today is any better than anybody else. Yes, the O negatives are a little bit better as far as their IQs go, but you know everybody knows what IQ means. You could have a 200 IQ and be the dumbest person sitting in the room. So, you know, it's what you do with the IQ that makes a difference. It's not actually how big it is. It helps. It helps you understand and learn faster. But, you know, just because you've got an IQ of 110 or 120 doesn't mean you're not brilliant. It just means you've got to work harder at it.
Okay. Brent, thank you for the call. Excellent question. I'm glad I know a mutant. Brent has come out of the closet as a mutant this evening. That's a good thing. 623-444-5889. 623-444-5889 if you have a question or a comment for Joe Montaldo. If you are outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, feel free to call us or to use our flash message option on the website. Caller, you are live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Nancy from Bastrop, Texas.
Hello, Nancy.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
I have a question for your guest.
Mm-hmm.
What about AB negative? What kind of characteristics do we have?
Well, okay, now, because it gets a little weird when you get into the ABs. AB negative, all the negatives are going to have similar traits as far as IQ, understanding, being easygoing. It's something that runs across the negatives. Now, by the way, this is important because I know most people understand this. If you take all the negatives on the planet, whether it's AB, AA, or O, we only make up 15% of the world's population. But we are in control of more than 75% of the world. Most people don't realize, but alive today, most of the leaders alive today are a negative. They're not a positive. And it's kind of a weird thing because the planet's in a kind of a weird shape. But AB negatives are actually quite cool people. They're a little... AB positives are more risk takers than AB negatives are, but AB negatives like to do a lot of stuff off the cuff, which makes them a little unpredictable and a little dangerous sometimes. But they're very bright, they're very brilliant, they usually tend to shine in anywhere they are, and they usually have very outgoing personalities. Not always, though. There's always an exception to every rule, but They really do. They're usually pretty outgoing individuals, and I find that amongst all the negatives. And I also find a lot of stuff like they don't anger as fast. They're more patient. They're more understanding. Their tempers are better controlled. And the positives don't seem to be. But, you know, if you go look at the key world positions today, like such as, you know, what presidents are negative and which ones are positives, you'll find that the positives control the power, even though the negatives may have an overall more control of planet out of the 195 nations, maybe 100 of them they may have. The nations that count, they don't. Not at this point, anyway. Maybe next election. So, you know, that might help you understand a little bit, too.
You think, if I understand right, you think that 25,000 years ago or so, aliens changed indigenous people or something, whatever was here, kind of like the story of the Anunnakis who created a helper to work in the mines or something, and that's how the negative came to be?
Well, kind of, because what we really think is about 200,000 or 300,000 years ago, the human-type aliens created a race that the reptilian-type aliens interbred with. We all have a reptilian section in our brain. Later on, down the line, the grays interbred with those, and that's what created the Rh negative. All we know for sure is between 25 and 35,000 years ago, Rh negative disappeared on the planet out of nowhere. For no reason, and no doctor alive today can give you a plausible explanation for why it happened. None of them. It's a complete mystery to them.
And you think that being Rh negative would lend one more to have been an abductee?
Well, maybe it's the Rh negatives are closer to the original bloodline. We know that they abduct in family lines. The grays, the reptilians, and the humans all abduct in family lines. By knowing that, maybe that's who they're looking for, the ones closer related to the original, you know, the original prodigy, when they all first interbred together. Maybe they're staying in those lines because those bloodlines are pure. Well, you know, that they probably originally only interbred with 10 or 15% of the population, which is about what is going on today, and that's what the Rh negatives are, about 15% of the population. And so they may just be the pure bloodlines more closely related to the aliens. It might just be why they abduct those people. Because you don't really, it's not that O positives and A positives don't get abducted, they do. Just not on the magnitude that the RHs do.
Mm-hmm. Well, okay, it explains more of, you know, what you think. I find that very interesting. Thanks a lot.
It's really weird.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for the call. Okay, now, RH negative is 15% of the population, but you said they're like 80% of the abductees?
At current, they're 66%. 34% of our contactees are Rh positive, 66% are Rh negative. And it's a vast amount. And out of that 66%, something like 46% of those are O negative. And then out of all the eye colors there are, 50% of our contactees are green-eyed or hazel-eyed. So there's definitely some connection to those mutations, but, you know, we're looking, Kevin. We got a lot of ideas, but you know, you got to be careful when you get around those.
When you come across these statistical trends like this, is there anything that you know of that suggests an answer to why? For instance, 50% are green eyes or hazel eyes. Anything that suggests to you why that would be the case?
Well, because, I'm going to see if I can say this. Oh, well, anyway, let's just say this. There's a rumor that at least one of the types of aliens have green eyes. And we'll just leave it at that. But I don't really think that's what it actually is. What I think it is I think what's happened over the years is because of the powerful mutation of the Rh negative, I think it just forced the mutation of the brown and blue eyes into green. I just don't understand why, you know, the science just says that brown and blue make green, and that's how it came around being. But the problem with that is there was no green eyes prior to 35,000 years ago. There just weren't. There weren't green-eyed people. Now, how do I know that? I have no idea, Kevin, but I've heard many, many scientists say, no, there weren't. They just weren't. And then it's another really weird thing, but the green-eyed population on the planet in the old days was very segmented. Like Chinese people. You ever met a green-eyed Chinese people? It's a very rare thing. Same thing with Indian people. It's a very rare thing. Even Native Americans, it's a very rare thing. A lot of the Native populations you're going to find just did not have green eyes. It was not a thing. So if brown and blue made green, why the hell wasn't there green in the regular and the rest of those Native populations? Something forced that mutation to happen. And I really do think it had something to do with the introduction of the Rh negative at the time. I think it just was one of the things that allowed it to force. I know a lot of people want to say that either the grays or the reptilians had a green eyes, which is all fine. And then they don't have a problem with that. I don't really think that's what the cause of it is. But hey, it could be. I don't know. I mean, it could be. I think it was something else, forced evolution or something.
How many different types of aliens are visiting the Earth?
For me, there's six types. I'm not, you know, with Greer and them, every time I hear that 56 types, I start spinning in my chair and laughing. I really do.
All right, we'll get the rest of that answer whenever we come back. But, ladies and gentlemen, we have to step away for a break here, and then we will be back, all right?
Kevin Smith Show.
All right, welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and welcome back to my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. Joe, did you make it through the break? Are you still with us?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Gary from Nebraska.
Hello, Gary.
Well, I have something of a comment and a question.
Okay, go ahead.
The first is, if memory serves me correctly, and I hope I identify attribute correctly, out in Colorado, maybe 5 to 10 years ago, Linda Howell was checking a cattle mutilation site, and one of the things that was remarkable at that time is around that animal was scattered pure hemoglobin, it turned out. It required a laboratory to verify it, and well, you're talking about hemoglobin. I don't know if there's any connection to that and what you discussed earlier, but it was interesting from my perspective.
Yeah. It seems like I remember that.
Maybe it's a curiosity, but there's nothing you can do with it, I don't suppose.
Well, we know that the blood's taken from the cows. We know they drain all the blood from the cows.
Well, the other remark I wanted to ask, and I don't know if it fits in very well, has anybody ever taken time to do a little research and comparison the blood of reptiles here on Earth?
To compare them to what, Gary?
Well, our blood, or what we might suppose alien blood to be.
I'm not aware of anybody doing a study of reptile blood. How about you, Joe?
Not that I've heard. I could probably look into it, but not that I've heard. And I'm not, you know, when it comes to blood on planet Earth, it's not all that much different. I mean, it's really not. I mean, as far as anything that's really alive, it all seems to be fairly basic. I mean, as far as the way we understand blood, I got to be honest about this too. I don't think if we all come from this galaxy, that the blood types are going to be all that much different. I mean, if you evolved on an oxygen-based planet along the similar lines as we do, I think your blood will probably be quite similar to ours. I'm sure there are going to be alien races that are going to be quite different, but I think there are going to be a lot more out there that are closer to us than even we want to think.
Well, when you're talking about reptilians, why, it just occurred to me that in my quirky way, I just thought some of our local reptiles, maybe there's a possible connection, but I don't know it. Well, thank you for your time.
Okay, Gary, thanks for the call.
We know them reptiles got green eyes.
Well, there is a part of our brain that doctors refer to as the reptilian part of our brain. And they say it's very primitive. But they say that we all have a reptilian part of our brain. Now, I think what they're referring to is, I think that's a reference to their deep-seated belief in Darwin's theory of evolution. Which, I don't know where you stand on that, but I mean, where I stand on it is Darwin, I give credit where credit's due, and I think where credit is due is that he recognized something else was happening other than what the church was teaching.
Oh, yeah.
And about how we got here. There was something else going on. I give him credit for that. But I really do, honestly, think that the theory itself starts off on the wrong foot, headed the wrong direction, and I think it's wrong all the way through. And I get scorched for that. You know, there are people who say, you know, I thought you were intelligent until I heard that. Oh, I'm so sorry to disappoint you. But no, I think Darwin, I think his theory of evolution is all wet. I think it's dead like he is, except in the minds and hearts of those who still faithfully worship at the altar of Darwin's beard.
No, I mean, there's some things I think that he might have been right on, but I don't think he was even closer to origins of man. Really, I mean, you know, there's that story, Kevin, that stays in history. Every culture I've ever looked into, I find a similar story. It's the Adam and Eve story is what it is, and the serpent. But the earliest is in the Sumerians, which talk about that. They also talk about Ezekiel and several other things in Sumerian texts that I find interesting. But it's there. It's in the Egyptians. It's in the Dogon. This is a creed. This is a myth that basically says that there was a human race here, and that a serpent or a reptilian came forth and gave them sentience. And the way you know this is because all the stories are the same way. In the Bible, it's a real easy one. What was the first thing Eve did? She grabbed a fig leaf and covered all the vital parts because she now realized she was naked to the world. She was self-aware. She was actually aware of herself. She was self-aware. That's the hence why she clothed herself. And this story is in every ancient culture, long before the Bible was ever even written. So there's got to be some truth to it somewhere. It's just, it's one of those things that grabs me. But for me, it's more about, was there a primitive man, a species here prior to this intervention? Was there like an ape-like species here prior to this intervention? Or did the human aliens that came here and needed a slave race use their DNA along with some local stock monkey or something, maybe the rhesus monkey for that matter, and created a slave race. And then the reptilians came home and said, what the hell? And said, well, we're just, you women look cool, let's go have some fun, and created either us or something a lot like us, one or the other. I'm not sure if it's exactly us, but real close to us. It's a weird theory.
Okay, let's run with that. We'll assume that things happened pretty much like what you've described. Then let's project it into the future. Who's coming back next, and what are they going to do?
You know, this is something that fascinates me when I think about this long term, because here we are, some little doofy race that the human race involved, created, and then the reptilians got involved with, and the Glades came bebopping along and said, wow, what is this? This could be interesting. Maybe on behalf of the light beings, maybe not. Who knows for sure? So they get involved with this. Now, here we are. here's a species that now has the DNA of three of the more advanced species in the known galaxy. What are we going to be a million years from now, or 500 million years from now, or like the Greys, 1 billion years from now? We will either be like the light beams, or we will be the next most dominant life form in the universe, because sooner or later, like everything else in life, we will surpass our creators and our masters. You know, one day you're the apprentice, the next day you're the master. And in the grand scheme of the universe, a billion years is nothing. I mean, the universe is going to be trillions of years before it goes into dust, or collapses in upon itself. So, we can achieve greatness if we don't blow ourselves off the planet. And humans have proven that they can be resilient, they can be brilliant, and they can exceed their self. But somewhere along the line, we're getting really mixed and confused, but I'm not going to get into that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think the question at this point is, what are we going to be 50 years from now?
That's a damn good question there.
I think maybe even a better question is not what are we going to be, but are we going to be 10 years from now?
That's a good question in itself, because I was thinking just today, if we get Mitt Romney and Linda Buckman or Obama, I'm moving to Canada. I'm becoming Canadian.
Well, you know, regardless of...
Hell, I might go to Mexico.
Well, regardless of who gets elected for Congress, for Senate, for President, nothing is going to change for the better. It's all going to be what it is, which is more of the same. All right. Now, having said that, and we'll sweep that aside, I think there are trends afoot in the world that have really nothing to do with the politicians. Politicians want to make everything have something to do with them, like they invented the Internet. You know, there are trends afoot that are going to be afoot if all the politicians go out of business. These trends are still going to be afoot. Now, one of those trends is transhumanism. And when we think of transhumanism, we usually think of chips being put into your brain, turning you into a cyborg, that sort of thing. But there's another type of transhumanism. And it's beginning, and I warned you folks, I told you about this in 2001, and that is they are now beginning to create human-animal hybrid clones. And there's an article about that. In this article is in the K-file, so I hope you were subscribed, and because if you were, you got it. Here in the United States, they're going to grow a, I think it's a rabbit. I think that's right. I think it's going to be a rabbit with a human brain. Now, they're doing this sort of stuff already. Right here in the United States. Just last year, I think it was, they created some pigs that have human blood. And now they're going to do a rabbit with a human brain. That's transhumanism as well. So, you know, what are we going to be in 10 years? 2001, that was 10 years ago when they were having the big debates about the ethics of cloning, the ethics of doing genetic research and cloning using human embryos. And I said 10 years ago, this is where it will lead. And people emailed me, Joe, and said, you know what? You're extreme, and you're anti-science. That would never happen. Well, here we are, and it's happening as I speak to you. It's inevitable. Once you start something in motion, it continues in motion unless other forces act on it to stop it. And other forces did not act on it to stop this, so here we are. And that's transhumanism. Are we going to be walking down the street in a few years looking at, you know, dogs with human heads, humans with dog heads, so forth? And that brings up then, and I'll shut up after this, that brings up all those pictures you see in Egypt of humans with bird heads, humans with dog heads, so forth. Humans with lion heads. We see those pictures in Egypt. Is it possible that somebody back then was doing this kind of transhuman genetic engineering and they were just drawing pictures of what they saw?
You know, it's really interesting you said that, because in the Sumerian text, they talk about the seven creations of man. And when they start naming the seven creations of man, it sounds a lot like the Egyptian gods. Or not the Egyptian gods, but the a lot of the Egyptian statues, like the guy with the dog head, the bird head. There's several, and it's not just there, there's other locations on the planet where you see these statues and you wonder at first what they were trying to do. But somewhere along the line, they settled for the species that looked most like us. Maybe because we were easier, maybe we didn't have beaks that snapped their little heads off and stuff. Or tiger paws, so somewhere wings to fly off, so somewhere they decided to use us. And then somewhere else, because I think definitely red office.
Okay, we have to step away for a break, ladies and gentlemen, and we shall return right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show, and my guest this evening, Joe Montaldo. Joe, we have a flash message from Leonardo in Puerto Rico. I want to be sure and get that in here before we run out of time.
Great.
All right, he says, hi, Kevin, and guest, my wife is O-positive and has greenish eyes. Man, can she work all day. I get dizzy just by looking at her. It's as if she had a power source that just won't shut off. Me, I'm B positive, and 8 hours is about as aggressive as I get. After that, it's Miller time. Sometimes I have to stop her from overdoing it, but at bedtime, she can sleep for 10 hours. Is that typical of O positive?
O positives are go-getters. There's no doubt about that. There's a lot of them out in the world. Well, think of it like this. O positive makes I think it's 36 or 38% of the world's population. They're just out there. They're everywhere, kicking butt. It's just the kind of people they are. And you know what? It's weird because O negatives like to sleep. O positives like to sleep. O negatives don't.
Wait a minute. Say that. Hang on. Say that again.
O positives like to sleep. They'll sleep. For them, common sleep is between 7 and 9 hours. For an O negative, between 5 and 7 hours. It's just a difference. It's one of them weird, dumb things. I have no idea what it even means, to be honest with you, but it's a statistic that came up in the research while we were from, I think it's John Hopkins or somewhere. I was like, what is, you know, I don't know what it means.
All right. Let me see how I fit. I'm A positive. I sleep for 4 hours, and I don't dream. People say, oh, you do, you just don't remember it. And my response to that is, how do you know? You're not in my head. I don't dream. I can remember when I used to dream. I don't dream. 4 hours, that's it. Now, when it comes time for my 4 hours, it's like somebody turns a light switch. Bam, that's it. I'm out. 4 hours later, it's like somebody turns a light switch on. Bam, that's it. I'm awake. And it doesn't matter if I say, well, I think I'm going to get another hour or two of sleep. It ain't happening. It's not going to happen. I get 4 hours.
It doesn't really affect your life, does it?
No. Now, the only time I sleep more is if I'm sick. If I'm sick, even just a little bit, man, I'm hitting those 12-hour sleeps and can't wake up. But if I'm well, 4 hours is it. I got to have the 4, but I don't do 4.5. I don't do 5. So how does that fit with your blood profile?
Well, I'll tell you what my doctor told me, because I sleep between an average of 4 to 6 hours a night. And I asked him one time, because it aggravates me. You know, so I got friends say I ate. Now, if I go out drinking all night, yeah, I can sleep the next day.
I guess
if
so.
If I stay out all night and go drinking, I'm still going to only actually end up with 5 or 8 hours of sleep, because I'm not going to go to sleep till 6 or 7 in the morning. But anyway, my doctor told me one time, because I asked him actually more than one time, I said, well, doc, what? He said, Joey, you are what they call a healthy insomniac. He says, if it doesn't affect your health and it doesn't affect your emotional or well-being, he said, then your body has figured out a way to deal with it, and they do. They have a category called the healthy insomniac. But you got to watch, because it is one of them things, you know, lack of sleep can get you in a lot of trouble with a lot of different things. But some people's body, for some reason or another, has the ability to adjust with it. But I don't think it has anything to do with blood types so much as maybe it's a cross between blood types and personality types. It's a strange thing, because I do know a few people in this category, and I know a few contactees in this category, but I also know a few people that are getting 6 to 8 hours of sleep a day, and it still isn't enough.
Yeah.
It's a tough one. It's a strange thing.
Part two of your blood study addresses the correlation, doesn't it, between the blood types and the personality types.
Yeah, and that's what part two is going to involve, because we really want to lay a good solid foundation. If you're a contactee, or if you're a person who's having contact and you're A or O or Rh negative, whatever, we want to see what your personality is. I really want to get a sense of their attitudes, how they feel about it. I want to get a good firm grasp. So that way, when my investigators and our directors are discussing this with other people, they've already got a good, solid, hard sense of what a contactee is, you know, mm-hmm. without having to go through all the forms and other stuff that we do now, which we're going to still do. But this will give us a much easier, like when we're attending conferences or traveling or having people come in, it will give us the data to be able to say, okay, it's a 90% chance that this individual is a contactee. Let's take it to the next level. Instead, it'll take a lot of the guesswork out, is what it'll do, Kevin. It really will. It'll make my life so much easier.
Well, you said earlier that there is a very large percentage of Native Americans that are O, mm-hmm. positive or negative, but they're O. And there is a very large number of the contactees. There is a correlation between them being part Native American and part Irish. I don't know that I'm part Irish. I am part Celtic and part Native American. And yet I don't have the O positive blood or O negative either. How did I miss out?
I'm glad you brought that up, because people get people right into it and they get mad. Well, I'm a contactee and I'm A positive. Well, yeah, you can be a contactee and be A positive. It's some reason there's a progression going on here, but they're breeding across the line. So let's say they pick you up. Okay, you're A positive. They go pick up Jane from South America. She's B negative. They breed y'all together. They get an AB negative. Okay, their kids may be AB positive next time, but those kids are going to probably breed with somebody O and create an O negative, because it's going to throw back to the negative gene before that, and so on and so forth. See, for us, it gets a little complicated, because the Grays are thinking probably like chess players do, several hundred moves ahead, whereas humans, we're kind of limited to what we can see in front of our face, you know, what's right there. So we do understand that it doesn't matter what blood type you are, you've got a chance of being abducted. Yes, if you are O negative, with green eyes, yes, your chances have gone up quite considerably. But just because you're brown-eyed A positive doesn't mean that it's not going to happen or it's not involved. Mm-hmm. It really, like I said earlier, I think it really goes back to this family lines. And what I'm really looking for is, okay, Kevin, you're A positive. Was the reptilians A positive? Was the humans A positive? Was the Grays A positive? I'm pretty sure that we're going to find out that at least two of our blood types are directly related to these frickin' aliens. I would bet whatever the pre-blood type was A, which was probably the Nordic human-type aliens interbreeding with whatever, or actually not interbreeding, but creating with whatever local matter was here, and then the reptilians entered in, and they were probably B. Now, was O from that? AB was from that, I'm sure, but was O from that or was O from the grave? And I'm really starting to think that you're going to see more and more along these lines that there are direct family lines running back. And what I started, something else in this blood type study that I should have mentioned earlier, I am looking to correlate the type of alien with the type of blood, meaning if you are A, what aliens are abducting you? Is it Greys? Is it reptilians? Is it humans? I want to see if there's a correlation between that, because we may find that they're tracking their own family lines or the other guys. So I'm interested to see where that's going to take us. When I find out, I'll call you and let you know.
That sounds like a deal. Joe, I want to thank you for being with us this evening, especially on such short notice.
Not even a problem. I always love coming on, Kevin. You can call me anytime, man.
All right. Stay on the line with me for a moment. Ladies and gentlemen, I hope it's been instructive and interesting for you this evening, and I hope that you learned something here or heard something here that you hadn't heard before. Remember this. We all tend to think the rest of the world is like where we're standing, but the only place that's like where you're standing is where you're standing. That's true for the whole planet. We think the rest of the universe is supposed to work like this does here. The only place that works like this is right here. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time, so long, everybody.